Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday! And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. Guys, coming up on today's show, Henry Cejudo wants to fight Sean O'Malley. Will he get the fight? I'll tell you what I think. Plus, John Jones says Stipe will likely be his last fight, and apparently Mike Tyson is having some trouble walking. Let's get to all of that, and let's begin right here. Guys, Michael Chandler is confident Conor McGregor is going to return. I'm not. And where does that come from? I felt like, as I'm watching Chandler and Frank Yeager retired, my favorite fighter, so I need a new favorite fighter. It's been years, but I haven't found one yet. But I will tell you, I'm down to two. Michael Chandler's on that list of two. He might be my favorite. So I watch everything he does. I listen to it. I find him very entertaining. I feel that he has embraced that side of it. I feel like when we're talking about Sean O'Malley's, Sean Strickland, Bilal Muhammad, as different as all of their shtick is, I feel like we got to put Chandler in there too. When you're talking about understanding the entertainment, giving the audience something aside from the performance as a monetizable commodity. Just not guys doing it. I even pulled Adesanya off that list. Because I don't know what Izzy's gonna do next, right? It's one of those things. And Izzy hasn't been out there doing it like he used to do. And Izzy really was the bar, right? It was Izzy and O'Malley battling it out for this position. I take the time to explain that to you because I feel like when Chandler said that, there was a little bit of sportsmanship in there. I feel like as mad as Chandler is at his opponent, at his partner, right? Don't forget that. No matter how real and how hot the heat is, you guys are still in business together. And Michael Chandler would have the right to disparage and burn Conor McGregor right now to the ground. And I think he would like to. But there's also that side of sportsmanship. And I have to consider that. Because I feel that Chandler's being kind. I don't feel that Chandler believes that. Guys, let's work through these numbers real fast. And let's be real fair with one another. And let's also understand that everything in life you must apply the baseball rule to. I don't give a damn if you're looking at a car, if you're looking at a house, if you're looking at colleges for your kid, whatever it is, when you get to three strikes, you're out. You got to move on. As soon as you find three things against, just stop. You don't need to find the fourth. You don't need to find the fifth. Even if you could juxtapose and weigh that, but I got 100 in the positive column. As soon as there's three strikes, get out. Move on. Conor McGregor, the night he was broken in half, and had to be carried out of the ring against Dustin Poirier, it was very unlikely that he would return. Now, to make things worse, okay, for the return of Conor McGregor, he sells a whiskey company for an unbelievable sum of money, and he finds himself in the movie business, of which he did a really good job, and the numbers support it because they broke a record. So now, right, anytime you retire, you do have a big problem. A great problem to have, but it's a problem nonetheless. What are you going to do with your time? And the entire goal in life of trying to make money, trying to capture that level of financial success, is so that you can choose what you do with your time. You now no longer have to do certain things with your time, whether you enjoy them or not. It still now becomes a choice. And it's a problem. That choice is a problem, but it's not one that Conor had. Conor had already fallen into what he could do next. He could run with for the next decade if he chose to. But when I hear Chandler talk about, right, and don't forget, so you got Conor, he's broken in half, not likely to return. Find something else and has tremendous success with it, not likely to return. Something gets in his way to the point that he puts out a discolored pinky toe, which may or not be broken, it may or not be his. Pulls out of a fight and a press conference in his home city. We're at the three strikes. We're there. Now, there is 4, 5, and 6 that are already in front of us. I don't need to list them because we're already there. I'll tell you guys this. Of all the things in life that are hard to do, and you all have struggles and you all have jobs and they're tough, whether you like them, whether you don't like them, it doesn't make a bit of difference. There's still pushes and pulls, right? Like if you're in a construction or some kind of a service or a labor industry, you still need someone to call and say, hey, can you come look at my pipes? Right, you've always got these things, but I will tell you one of the places that it's easiest to do your job, and that is if you're signed to the UFC. There will be a weight category, but you already know the division you're in. There will be a set of rules known as Unified. If you have any questions on those, call President Mike Mazzulli. Believe it or not, he's accessible, and he will answer his phone. They're going to have a venue, but you don't have to play the venue game. All you do is get on an airplane. That's all you do. You just show up to the airport and get on the airplane. Oh, by the way, they're going to send you a couple of tickets. So, if you want to fight and you're signed to the UFC, and I get to tell you, it's not like that everywhere. Like if you want to be a fighter and you're on the regional scene, oh my goodness, it's so hard. It's so hard to get matches, to find opponents. Even when you get the match and you get the opponent, the pay is going to be something you don't like, but you're doing that because you got a dream. You don't know if the guy's going to show up. You go through an entire training camp and have the guy not show up. It happens all the time. It's a very unorganized situation. In the UFC, if you want to fight, it is really easy. They're going to call you a couple, three times a year. You'll already know the weight. And you'll already know the rules. And they'll figure the opponent out for you. You don't have to do anything there. And if you want to pitch in and help with the marketing and the promotion of it, great. But if you don't, turns out they're pretty good marketing promotion company, they'll handle it for you. It's one of these things where, how can I possibly believe that he wants to fight? How can I believe that? How? He's got a contract. He knows the rules. Weight class is whatever he decides to show up in. Right? Like there's some really unique and special things that are built in, very intrinsic to his contract that he knows inside and out. He could recite it for you. And I told you guys the other day, and I just set it down, and I do wonder what eagles are watching, what eagles are paying attention, because if you follow this channel, there's no place on the internet you will ever learn more than my channel. But, and Jesse on Fire is the first one to call me out on this, but he's right. It's not always what I say. There's a lot within what I don't say, and I do get paid to put down ideas. That's true. I could save a promoter a lot of money by bringing you guys an idea, putting it in a thumbnail, and not only being audited, but being publicly audited. That's true. There are times that I will bring you, hey, what do you guys think of this? And Jesse called me out. And it's true. And I told you guys the other day, and I set it down and I walked away, but I told you as Conor was asking to fight in bare knuckle, to have a carve-out from his UFC contract. I told you, he does not need one. I told you, as a matter of fact, nobody needs one. There is no exclusive contract in the UFC, and I didn't go on. I didn't further that thought or tell you why I would say such a thing that no legal mind has ever agreed with, and I'm not going to do it now either. I'm just going to let you know. There's no place in the world that I've ever seen that is easier to do your job if your job is fighting than being signed to the UFC. They will call you. They will handle everything else. They will even send you the plane tickets. So, to make believe that Connor is going to fight, that's something that Chandler is clinging to, and I think I can understand that because he would also like to cling to the idea that he gets what he worked and sacrificed so hard for. But I am not quite so easy to fool. Jon Jones, Stipe Miocic. So, I was with someone meaningful, even though their name is slipping me, right? It might have been Daniel, it might have been Dominic Cruz, might have been Anik or Fitzgerald, or right? But it's somebody that, and they made a comment about how clear it was, how obvious it was that Stipe versus Jon Jones is the biggest fight that heavyweight has right now. And might have even said that UFC has. Saying, hey, no wonder taking it to the Garden. They're waiting for that. No wonder, you know, it's going to the top of the bill at the Story Venue. I like to fight, but I didn't know that. And if I was challenged with that, well, Chael, then tell me a bigger fight at heavyweight. I don't know that I could, but I still thought you guys liked the Aspinall idea. I still thought there was something to Pereira moving up. And when I moved Pereira, by the way, I didn't put him against Jones. I put Pereira against Aspinall since he's available. Either way, there's certain numbers and things you can check with some guys in TV. And I did go and ask that question. I said, hey, off of the metrics, it's Jones versus Stipe. And they laugh. They go, oh, yeah, 2-1. 2-1, this biggest fight. Really? So I'm sharing that with you. I just wonder what your pulse feels. Because as I'm watching the build and I'm watching, everything is consistent. Like, John is happy to do media, but is going to fumble it. That's not what he does. Stipe isn't going to do the media. Then you've got Dana, who's going to do his absolute best to tell the story. He'll bring in all the bells and whistles, but he's largely going to do that with B-roll, which means past footage, in an editing room and then put out a package. And you're going to have to do it that way. You're going to have to tell the story of the big power here and the great wrestling here and the world championship here and a world championship coming over here. You're going to have to do that because these guys aren't going to sit down and give it to you. And Dana has consistently, whether it is coincidence or intentional, found a way when discussing this fight to discuss a projected future possible way down the road of Jon Jones and Tom Aspinall. Okay. So I don't know if that's a chess play and we just haven't quite seen what the master's doing yet, or if it's a coincidence, or if it's just a more comfortable and you feel like you have a little bit more to say, right? Everybody gets uncomfortable talking about Stipe because he's so revered, right? I mean, he's a first responder. He's rich and famous, could be out living the life. He's not. The life he wants to at home with his wife and the being parent. And I'm just sharing for you. He's a little off limits. So when they're, John started this, somebody else had said, we knew Stipe was going to retire, but then somebody else had said they both might retire. Like, this got said by somebody. Might have been Dana. Somebody threw this out, guys. It was way back in March of last year. A year and 5 months ago. Nobody knows. Nobody knows how many months ago March of last year is from now. But it feels like a year and five. All right. John went with it. I watched this happen. I watch right here from Bad Guy Studios. We threw it up on it, and I'm watching the reports on the Mania and the Elbow. I'm watching this, and I'm going, oh, John has grabbed on to that retirement idea. He did not mean it. It was completely insincere. It wasn't even his idea. Somebody else said it. He heard it, thought it might be good to go with. And a couple different reasons guys that are not going to retire say that they're going to retire. A couple. One could be, he heard somebody else say it, thought it might be good marketing. He never comes out and does anything to try for marketing, and he went for it. Another one is just the same reason you did things like that when you were a child, so that somebody else would tell, oh, no, hey, whoa, no, hey, we want you. Hey, you're great coming in. I mean, that's it, though. That's the psychology behind it. The problem with this one, when you're talking about the psychology, is John said it again. And he said it again. And again and again. And anything that you say and you have the ability to control that you say over and over again, you can make those things become so. And I watched this happen. And I'm going, hey, guy, hit the brakes on that, John, because you never meant it anyway. It wasn't sincere. Like, don't create that. Let's not make that real. And there is something to this Aspinall idea. Okay, I'm tying these in for you because John resurfaced at Sphere. Dressed like a cowboy to some regard. I have to admit, he looked pretty cool. He's in all black. He's got a cowboy hat on. It was pretty cool. And now he's over there doing pictures of this, like him and Pierre. And Pierre's also looking cool. He's in like a vest with no shirt on. It's like this Tarzan type thing. It made for good imagery. Now you got these two together. So what do you want to do with that? Are these two going to get along or are they not going to get along? And I don't have the answer. But it'd be very hard for them to get mad at each other, considering Pejera doesn't speak English, and you're not going to get very far beyond hello and some photos. That's not going to piss anybody off. So John does an interview. Somebody talks to him. And John says, this is going to be my John says, this is going to be my last time. He's talking about his fight with Stipe. His fight in New York at Madison Square Garden. And again, he wants to market. John does look at other guys and their ability to bring in attention and market. He does want to do that. He is playful and he's handsome enough. He got a smile. He's charismatic. Like he wants to do it. He just, but it just doesn't come out. So he doesn't stop there. He doesn't stop with this will most likely be, he doesn't stop with this will be my last time. He adds, most likely. So, I mean, everything is gone, right? As soon as you say most likely, it's like including the word could. You have said nothing if you included the word could. We could wake up on Mars tomorrow. We're not going to wake up on Mars. Yeah, but could. We're not saying we're going to. I'm just sharing for you. When I watched John do this, it's like, yeah, there he is. Welcome back. Welcome back. Kind of missed him a little bit. It's going to be my last one, most likely. And I wish that there would be questions, okay? If I was to tie all of these thoughts together, which is John is putting this thing, what do you want to call it? You want to call it the universe or something like this? Like, while the book, The Secret, is largely BS, the laws of attraction are real. Very real. And if John keeps talking about, I'm going to be retired, I'm not going to fight Aspinall, it's going to become more of a thing. Not only does he run the jeopardy of convincing himself, if he succeeds at convincing other people, Aspinall might just get on with it. As of right now, Aspinall is going to wait around for him. Going to sit and wait for an undisputed touchdown, but that will change, right? He got kids and a wife at home. It's one of these things. I'm sure lots of guys don't want to show up for work. It doesn't work that way. I'm just sharing for you. Like, there are consequences to some of those words. And Tom is also, I'm going back to Tom Aspinall, but he's also told the media, I'm going to be ready in November. I will be ready. I will be on point. I'll have my licensing, my medicals, be ready to get on the scale, and be ready to go five rounds with anybody in the world. He has said these things. And the last time that John and Stipe got booked at Madison Square Garden, the UFC, knowing what a monster fight that was, brought in contractually a backup fighter. His name was Sergey Pavlich. In fact, that backup fighter ended up backing him up and filling in that night for a title. So There would be no reason to not look at history as your best trajectory to the future. There would be no reason to not have a signed under contract backup in place for this fight, which, by the way, Tom Aspinall, clearly who that would be, who has already said he will be prepared, but not that he had been given the position. And you have Dana, who when doing interviews, finds himself discussing a potential of Tom Aspinall. You're right down the road, but I'm just saying, it seems like everything works here, and I wish that when they were asking John these questions, and they get the comment from him, if this is going to be my last one, most likely, they would have said, okay, Aspinall says he's going to be the backup fighter for this. A year ago, this exact same thing, you and Stipe both agreed, should something happen, the other would fight Sergey Pavlich. Could we do that exact same thing, but now make it Tom Aspinall? Now, I'm quite sure that John would say yes. I'm quite sure if we ever got to that spot, that's exactly how this is going to unfold. I'm just sharing from you, from a marketing standpoint, from me, if you're trying to bring attention, which is all you're trying to do when you say, this is going to be my last one, right? You're just trying to exercise the laws of supply and demand. That is your one and only goal. And I think another great marketing angle would just simply be Tom. Will Tom fill in? Stipe has been guaranteed a title fight. Well, if Tom's a backup, Stipe's getting that title fight. Right? A year ago, Dana said it'd be disrespectful to offer it to him. Well, that was for a vacant belt. There's two different champions. As long as Stipe shows up and one of them shows up, he's fighting for a title. All of a sudden, it's not disrespectful. I just think it'd be an interesting question. I think it would be simple. I think marketing, it would make sense. It is plausible to happen. I think it's unlikely. I think Stipe and John are going to get in there. But I think once you accept that and you put that out there, all of a sudden the idea and the notion, which was never sincere in the first place, of walking away and not doing Tom, all of a sudden that's gone. You're doing media. You're now doing it for both of them. I have never agreed with the UFC on that aspect of marketing, that we keep the backup fighter quiet. We keep it out. We don't confuse the audience. We don't falsely promise something we can't deliver. I've never agreed with that. I've always thought it was a coveted position. I've always thought it was an interesting position. I've always thought, what if? Adds to the event, not takes away. My own thought. I want to know. I can't prove that because it hasn't been done. It would be an experiment. But those are my thoughts. You know, Henry is a lesson in what to do. I've talked to you guys many times. And where does Kevin Lee fit into it for my longtime followers? But Kevin Lee, when he came to the top and he went all the way to the world title, multiple main events, and how he got there is a lesson to be studied. There are not guys who got there the same way as him. In professional wrestling, they call it going into business for yourself. That is where you are supposed to go out. You've got a segment. It's factored in by Vince, which is now who's Triple H. And you don't follow the script. You believe that you have an idea that will get over with the audience better than what you're being asked to read. Oh, and by the way, while it does serve the company, it is going to serve you, and it's going to lift you. And by the way, if you get it wrong, you know the consequence. But there are a number of guys who have done it. Stone Cold Steve Austin, the night he became Stone Cold Steve Austin, went into business for himself. He was not supposed to say Jake 316. He was not supposed to say Austin 316 says, I'm going to whip your ass. Did that all on his own, just for example. Now, what Kevin did was truly incredible. And even if you're seeing less of it now, Colby very much did the same thing, and Henry Cejudo. And all three of these guys started popping up. They said, wow, the UFC sure got behind them. And the UFC sending camera crews, and they're breaking off footage, and they're putting all these things out for these guys that are just in there talking about themselves. They're not even selling a show. They're not even talking about on sales. They're not talking about dot coms to go to get merchandise. They're not talking about events with specific locations and dates. They were talking about themselves. The UFC doesn't usually do it that way. And it took the audience almost a year before they realized, oh, the UFC is not even producing this. These guys have gone and hired their own production companies out of their own pocket, putting these types of things out. I'm just sharing for you those three guys. Truly, Kevin Lee, Henry Cejudo, Colby Covington got to the top and held their positions that were on shaky ground like everybody else, and they did it differently. Now, I like what Henry's done. And Henry's in a spot right now that's confusing to me. And if it's confusing me, I suspect it confuses others. So, just in the last 2 weeks, okay, Henry has not only said he wants to go back to 125 pounds, like, that's why I'm going to go back to 125 pounds. It's very different the way he said it. It was much more of an announcement of I'm going back to 125 pounds. I mean, he laid out a roadmap. He laid out why he was going back. He laid out who he was going to fight in his return. It was one of these things. I thought it was an announcement. I took it as an announcement. I thought Henry's now 125 pounder. That is what I thought for 2 weeks until last night when he called out Sugar Sean O'Malley. Now Henry and Sean have never got it right. I am completely into that. I want to bring Dominic Cruz into that mix. And let's get Arizona. Arizona's only so big, man. This would not work in Oregon. I'm telling you. If you got three hammers all in the same weight class, we would all be in the same gym. The state's not big enough. We don't have three gyms that can support it. Well, Arizona's not much bigger. They do. I could only imagine the heat around those three guys. Now, I'm only suggesting that, like, Henry did nothing wrong. I'm going back to it being confusing. And it's a larger issue. It's a larger issue and can create a larger problem that Henry doesn't deserve. Henry deserves to be discussed as the greatest combat athlete of all time. And whether you want to resist that statement or you want to anoint him with that statement, he deserves to be discussed with that statement. Can we agree on that? But he's not getting fights. Now, I've always just assumed it's because he doesn't want one. I've assumed in Henry's position and good standing that when he wants a match, he will ask for one and he will get one very quickly. I've assumed that. It doesn't mean it's so. But see, this is what my point is. The entire point is that if the UFC does not believe that a guy is committed, the UFC only does a couple of things, guys. Regardless of anything that you see and or think or feel that you know as a fan, and a conspiracy is fun, and while he's just saying that to sell tickets, that's a good time. But if you study it back from the day Dana White got involved in 2001, right? There's a whole nother UFC prior to 2001. There's two different eras to discuss. But with Dana White, they have a fiercely committed and adhered to the integrity of two things. The UFC is for champions and athletes who can be champions. Another way to finish after the comma for champions, comma, for athletes who have yet to prove that they can't be champion. As soon as it's established that you cannot win the entire thing, your time in the UFC is over. And the other policy, and Dana has never wavered from this, the best will fight the best. There's a year called 2012, and there was a number of suitors for the UFC that wanted to buy the whole thing. By a number of suitors, there was three. They wanted to buy the whole thing. And one of those suitors was Vince McMahon. And Vince was not a fight fan, and he really didn't follow it that close. I know he's told people that for years. That's not a work or an angle. He lived in that bubble of WWE. He really did it. But his son, Shane, who is an excellent businessman himself, did follow it. And Shane is the one that talked to his dad, and they had a price of $1.1 billion. If I'm wrong, it was $1.2 billion. I used to know the three suitors, and I used to know exactly why, and I still do know what the offers were, but I could assign them to the wrong person. And Vince looked at it. And he looked at it, and he considered it, and he got the numbers, and he looked at it, and he got his team together, and he looked at it. And finally, when Vince passed, he passed while making the statement, "It is not possible to have a champion if you can't control the outcome." So, boy, that makes a lot of sense, right? It's largely what boxing has done as well. It's very hard to know what to do or who to push if you're not going to carry a guy in some degree. Now, Vince is even different, where his number one revenue is coming from merchandising. We can't quite relate to that in MMA. But Vince has to know whose shirts to have, whose boxes of shirts am I ordering 20,000 of these for, right? Pretty easy to know. And how you're going to move them when you know what the outcomes are going to be. And you know what arenas to have these shirts in, because this guy's going over in the main event. I'm just sharing for you, right? A little bit of a different model. But Dana sure does not have that opinion. And history said in 2012 that Vince was right. History said Vince was right. And Dana never had that opinion. And has created stars. Has nothing to do with outcomes. He has stars that then can't defend. He has stars that then can't win in the first place. I'm just saying, right? Like, it was very interesting to see how that aged. But the reason I'm taking the time to tell you of these two policies, the best will fight the best, and the UFC is only for champions and people that can become champions, if the organization feels, and they're going to take you at your word. By the way, if you say, "I want to do 5 fights this year," it doesn't mean you're going to get them, but they will believe that you would like them. If you say, "I'm going to do 3 more and I'm done," they will believe you. Now, maybe you said it hoping that somebody would go, "No, okay, come on, you got 10 more left in you." They'll believe you. They will take you at your word. And my only concern for Henry is that the UFC is not convinced that Henry really wants to come back and or take on a full schedule. You know, Henry does so oftentimes, and it was something that I really liked about the Sean call-out, by the way. That fight isn't going to happen. I'm sharing the idea to former world champions. There are not very many world champions floating around divisions. There are not very many former world champions that you could even get on the docket with. 135 pounds, and this is off the top of my head, guys, I could produce right now for you 9 names. 9 world champions that are still competing at the highest level, 135 pounds. Could you imagine? But and so I like that Henry's calling him out, because see, now that's not a title fight. Now Henry is showing he's willing to do something besides title fights. I like that. I just want Henry to be really clear. And if I'm confused, do you want Sean at 135? Were you going down to 25? If you go to 25, are you willing to do multiple fights? And if you get the title, then you're willing to defend it, do this fair and square until somebody takes this off you. I mean, are you willing to do that? Are you willing to do it at 35? Henry's not keeping this from us, and Henry's not trying to confuse us. Henry himself hasn't fully decided. And that's the part I'm bringing to you. Henry watches the channel. I'm talking right to you, Henry. I'm just doing it in front of everybody. You have supporters out there. I am one of them. You have people that like your story and will tell your story. I am one of them. I'm confused right now on the story. I'm confused right now on the competitiveness, not on your skills, not on your abilities. I know how good you are. I know you're still good. I know your prime is still here. I know your age. I know all about it. Do you still have that eye of the tiger? To win the Olympic gold, you didn't show up and wrestle for the Olympic gold. You had to take out 3 of the baddest men in the world in the same day before you had the opportunity to go for the Olympic gold. It's the same thing you did when you got the UFC gold. Do you still have that mindset? Yes or no? Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chale, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale. Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, and how does my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss like the majority of the male population does, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that actually work, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized, chewable oral spray and serum treatment options so you can find what works best for you. Reaching out for help in this area can feel a bit embarrassing, but Hims has made this process so dignified and simple. All you have to do is answer a few questions online, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. No in-person visits to the doctor or pharmacy are needed. The whole process is 100% online. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get that confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/chale. That's Hims. HIMS.com/chale, like the famous gangster. For your personalized hair loss treatment options, HIMS.com/chale. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Daniel Cormier went and interviewed Merab. Do you guys know about this? Oh my God, I was so compelled to this story. So here's how the story goes, okay? Let's back up to Saturday night, something known as UFC at Sphere. Sphere? There's no P. Sphere? It's at Sphere? I don't know that it matters if it really is a one and done. I don't know that I got to take the time to learn it, but I would like to say things right. So at any rate, Merab, upset over the biggest star in O'Malley, draws right into what he knows is next, which is Nurmagomedov, even if he's campaigning for Figueiredo. At a minimum, he's got a real hard night out, okay? He can take on an undefeated prospect, or he can take on the former world champion, right? Like, this is 135 pounds. It is murderer's row over there. A lot of pressure. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do? There isn't a champion that has got out of the ring and has known what's next for them. Three times since 2019 has that happened in any weight class. This being the third time. three times has the champion got out of the ring and known exactly what's next for him. So Daniel goes, okay, just store that away. Let me jump back. Daniel sticks around. You've got Sunday. Sunday's travel day. Everybody goes home. Doesn't matter. You came from Japan. You come from Brazil. You're all at the airport, right? Las Vegas International. You're headed out on Sunday. Daniel sticks around. He sticks around because he's got an interview lined up with Marab. Marab lives in Las Vegas. Now, Marab and Aljo, very good friends. In fact, their homes are in a cul-de-sac. They're on the same street. You get to the end of the street, you get to the cul-de-sac. Here's Aljo on one side. Here's Marab. They are literally neighbors, right? Very, very close. All right, Daniel gets over there. And Daniel, not for nothing, he's a pretty busy guy. So he wants to bang this interview out. He would like to get home himself. So when he gets down there, there's one house on one side of the street. It's beautiful. He said that it's all trimmed, the hedges, the bushes, the grasses, two beautiful, well, shiny, washed automobiles in the driveway. That's Aljo's house, okay? Straight across the street, there's a house that's got the garage door open. In the garage does not sit a shiny, beautiful car. There's a wrestling mat. And in the driveway is the bench press. That's Marab's house. Well, Marab's not ready for the interview. Marab's out on a run. This is one in the afternoon on Monday after he became the champion of the world. Marab is out on a run. Now, Daniel's standing there. Daniel's a high dollar guy, by the way. It's not just easy. You're paying a lot of money to have a guy standing in a in a subdivision cul-de-sac next to a bench press, okay? And it's some family of Marab's comes down and says, oh no, he's excited. Please get comfortable. Can we get you anything, Mr. Cormier? He's out for a run. So Marab comes back and Daniel's like, Marab, I got a golf game, man. In a different state. Could you help me out? Could we do this? And Marab says, oh yes, yes, of course. Oh, I'm so happy you're here. Please just give me 20 minutes, please. So Daniel assumes Marab is going to go shower up and change and come down. No, he goes out to the driveway, to the bench press, and he finishes his workout. I just think that's cool. I mean, I got to just tell you, I think that's cool. I have only got to see that with my own eyes one time, Randy Couture. And Randy would fight, and early on, the UFC played Friday nights. So Randy would come home on Saturday. A lot of times he would go and be a commentator to a local amateur show, and he would even demand that the UFC change the ticket so he could be back. Like, he was committed to doing this just for the local Portland market, who, believe me, was beyond thrilled to see him. Standing ovation. They'd be going crazy. He'd get in the ring and do an interview the night after he won a world championship on paper. It's just one of these cool things, right? Really rare that somebody would get back like that. But then Monday would roll around. Randy'd be in the gym on time, dressed down and on the mats. Not on the sideline and watching. On the mat. I will admit, his intensity might have been different. I will admit that. I will admit the way that he was pushing as much to going through motions, but he was there, and he was working, and he was sweaty, and he would get better or get somebody else better. So to hear that Marab did this in private, in quiet, he didn't do this so Daniel would come out and tell the story. It was nothing like that. He was getting ready. He did not want to waste any time. And that's how Marab responded to knowing what's next, knowing whether it's Figueiredo, world champion, whether it's Nurmagomedov, 18-0, I have a problem standing in front of me. 135-pounders have a very rare where they can defend, and much more rare if they could defend twice. It is a wildly difficult division. In fact, I think, and don't quote me on this, and don't even think you need to correct me in the comment section. I know that I could be wrong. I think Aljo has the record because he did it twice. I don't think it's been done more than that. So, what a response. What an understanding. What a champion. very hard for champions to hold on to that belt. There's built-in byproducts to being champion. There's media tours, for example, right? Daniel, being in your driveway at 1 o'clock, nobody else on that card was interviewed by Daniel, a member of ESPN, on Monday at 1 o'clock. One guy agreed to it and happened to be the champion. So, pretty impressive. Pretty surprising. You then have on the other side of this, Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley flies home on Sunday, pure travel day. He's going to go and do his own podcast. He has his own obligations on Monday. No one's showing up for that. Guys are down. They're depressed. The last thing they want to do is even get up, let alone come and face the world and talk about what happened. Talk about one of the worst moments for them personally, right? I get that we can look at this different and go, man, that was a bright, shiny moment. You were at the Spear. You headlined it. You were close. It was competitive. You won moments. But it's not how he feels. But he showed up anyway. And where this becomes so relevant, and the reason I'm telling you what O'Malley did from the time he left Sphere to Travel Day to being in front of all of us on his podcast, the reason I'm telling you that is because we now get informed that O'Malley has a surgery lined up for a torn labrum. And what I'm trying to share with you is he did not get that surgery lined up post-fight. He had that surgery scheduled before the fight, so he knew he was compromised. This wasn't a surprise. A doctor had lined up a surgery. He was going to go do the fight, get the win, slip into surgery, put the next fight out a little bit. Nobody's going to be the wiser. And that's a very honorable thing to do. We know a lot of guys. I mean, right, we're in this new era where they want you to know they're hurt to the point that they're putting MRIs and x-rays up on their social media. Like their word's not good enough. Hey, I was hurt. Well, before any of you challenged me, here's my x-ray. It's just weird. It doesn't help. And a guy like O'Malley kept his mouth quiet. Follow the golden rule, which is the show must go on. And I've got to share that same praise with Merab, and it's done a little bit differently. But your response to victory for many guys is the death nail, just like a response to loss is a death nail for many guys. And there's some special leaders right now. There's special examples that you could look to, that you could idolize, that could mentor the next generation. Very cool thing. The bantamweight division should be very, very proud right now. Chimaev, overtraining, something always happening, getting sick, missing fights. He apparently agrees. He has finally responded to some of this, and he apparently agrees. He has left his team, and he has left his home. The article that I read said that he left Saudi Arabia where he was living, but I don't think that's right. I have never heard that he was living in Saudi Arabia. He was living in Abu Dhabi, which is within the United Arab Emirates, which is near Saudi Arabia, and it's a mistake they commonly get, but I'm not really stepping on the guy's toes that wrote this. Maybe I got it wrong, and he was in Saudi Arabia. He was in that part, right? He was in that eastern part. And either way, the point is, he left. So he's now at the base of Mount Everett. But the point of that is he's returned home. He is back in Russia. And it's the team, or at least the coach that he grew up with. I believe he left there at 17. Chimaev, the furthest that he went in wrestling was within the junior division in Russia, where he was third. And in Sweden, he had won the nationals two different times, but that's also within the junior division, to my understanding. And the only reason I take the time to tell you that is junior division, just kind of loosely before I go, just think of anybody in high school. Anybody in high school, boom, there's your junior division. And the reason I say that is that is as far as he went in wrestling, and I'm now hearing that he left them at 17. So that was his base. That was where he started. If he has returned to that team, that's of interest to me. I never love it when a guy changes teams, and it's very common in boxing. But in boxing, it's usually because you have an insecure fighter who cannot accept and own his losses. And that's just the truth. Generally, you have a very insecure, fake tough guy that cannot accept his own losses, so he fires his team and goes and works with somebody else. That is what you see in boxing. Like, boxing isn't quite as dirty and unloyal as you think. It is filthy and it's very unloyal. I'm just sharing for you. It usually comes from an insecurity of a guy, a grown-ass man in the tough guy business that cannot accept his loss, so he fires his team. I don't love to see it with an MMA. And I don't love to see it with an MMA for two reasons. One, I know the importance of team. Two, I know the importance to team to Chimaev, specifically. I know the way loyalty, I know how that works within his mind. And the idea of him changing a team, not to mention, look at where he went. He's completely undefeated. What do you mean change a team? He was the number one contender. That somehow went away, but he was the number one contender after he beat a world champion who many call the GOAT, and Kamaru Usman. Like, everything is going just fine for Chimaev. So him leaving a team would generally be something that would give me pause, and I would want to know why. I would also feel very bad for that team, because I know those coaches, man, they take you in like it's like a son. That would be a very hard thing, but I'm hearing that he's returning to the coach that he had before he went to the MMA side. It's very interesting. That story will work out. And I get that there's some hard feelings in there. I'm just sharing. I'm being very selfish right now. I'm just speaking purely about Chimaev and where I think Chimaev can go. And there will be nobody that knows him better than the coach that took him in when he was a little boy and put him in this until he was a young man. There was nobody. It's interesting. I don't know what kind of fighting they are doing at this academy. I don't know enough about it. I'm asking you guys questions. Leave me comments. I read them. I'm doing my own research. I got a message into his manager. If it's just a wrestling gym, we're going to have to revisit this. But if it's a gym that has wrestling and that coach is there and he's doing MMA, I would just like to know what other athletes are there. That's what I would like to know. I'd like to know who his workout partners are. That's what I'd like to know. I'd like to know who specifically are the coaches, not just the head coach, who's in charge, what have they done in MMA, when's the last time that they saw Chimaev? And I would like to know those things just as a way of trying to look ahead. I do believe Chimaev and Bo Nickel are going to find each other. No matter how apart they might be right now, I do think they're going to find each other. And Chimaev versus Robert Whittaker is a very confusing match. Like history says, and maybe I should even credit Marab from a few days ago, who reminded us that if you are a powerful wrestler with a gas tank, you have superior wrestling and superior cardio, like that recipe has worked since 1993. That's just the truth. That's just a reality. But Robert Whittaker is an exception, much like Maurice Smith was an exception, much like Holly Holm became an exception. Ask Yoel Romero, right? Just ask him how hard it is to tire out Whittaker or to take Whittaker off of his feet. So I'd like to know how he's training. One thing that gets very dull is a guy's wrestling. Like the idea that wrestling isn't enough, that is true, but it's not true to the extent that your lion eyes are telling you. Those great wrestlers, the Olympic medalist wrestler that's in there and he's not out wrestling guys. What you don't understand, he hadn't wrestled in 6 years. He hasn't wrestled in 9 years. He used to be a wrestler. Wrestlers will get away from that. It's the hardest workout you can do. As you get older, you can't do it. You just can't. And that changes about 23, guys. That changes about 24, 25. You can no longer do a college collegiate workout for 2 hours every afternoon. So when you see wrestlers that aren't out there, they're not wrestling, they're not dominated with their wrestling. Wait, the part that you're not told is he used to wrestle and his last match was 12 years ago. The part that you don't know that you think his last practice, his last workout in wrestling was 12 years ago. So if you take someone like Chimaev and you return him to that, right? He's one guy that has appeared to never get away from his wrestling. That skill stayed sharp, and he used that skill against Kamaru Usman, who is a national champion himself. But Kamaru didn't keep the skill as sharp. That's also just the truth. So many, when they get into MMA, well, I have that, and that's my base. I have that. I hear people say that. That is as false of a narrative as the last thing to go is your power or my footwork and my jab and everything come behind my jab. There's lies within this sport that have lived on. But I have is one of them. Hey, you got jiu-jitsu? Yeah, I have jiu-jitsu. I have no boxing. Oh, what do you mean you have it? What in the hell do you possibly think that means? You've practiced it? You've practiced it before? Well, did you practice it recently? It's relevant. We have our top guy, our undefeated, one of the bright faces, which is why he's going to main event, who Duplessis himself says the winner of this fight draws into me. Sean Strickland, who's next for Duplessis, co-signs that statement. Says, yes, whoever wins that fight will be winning, fighting the winner of our fight. I mean, this is a massively big deal, and now he has mixed up his training. We've got to figure out, is this for the better or not? And if he's returning to his original youth coach, I argue for you, it's going to be great. It's too hard to walk. It's too hard to walk, but 2 months from now, everything's going to be just right. That's a quote from Iron Mike Tyson. He was talking about his training, talking about his forthcoming fight with Jake Paul. So, what do you make of that? Oh, I should finish it because there was something else he said that was interesting. He said, I'm willing to do anything right now to make my body feel better. So, how are we to interpret that? I don't want to be a literalist, by the way, guys, but I'm forced to in these situations, right? I can't take things with a grain of salt. I don't know what the guy meant. I have to take him at his words and then break that down and then give you an interpretation. Okay, great. So I feel as though I can relate completely with what he's talking about. I mean, I know those nights that where you go to bed and you think, I'm going to have to take tomorrow off. I'm going to have to take the next couple of days off. I know those nights. Were you crawling in bed? I've had to pee in the middle of the night before during training camp. And the mere thought of having to get up and because your body's so sore, just the pain of stabbing. I just understand what he means. And he's also said that in 2 months, everything's going to be just right. And I wish he would have gone further with that. Like, is this part of the training process? Is part of the peaking process? Because see, I've always wondered, but I know you have too. 2 months, by the way, guys, is not very long. 2 months to do a 2-month training camp, to do a 3-month training camp, that works just fine when you're competing 3 times a year. So now all of a sudden you're closer to 6 to 9 months of actual training. And then in those other 3 to 5 months that just happen to exist on the calendar, you're still doing something. You're still in there. Now training is my entire life, training was a very coveted word. Jiu-jitsu specifically, but then followed by MMA, has corrupted the word. If you go into practice, if you go and do a workout, if you're doing your exercises, according to jiu-jitsu and now MMA, you're training. Hey, you go to training today? Hey, did you train yesterday? That's called practice. When you're training, you eat, sleep, and breathe the event. And it's a very unique thing. And you do not train 3 times a day nonstop, though you might work out and or exercise. And I only share the difference with you. This fight already got scrapped, right? These two and this event and Jerry's World and Netflix is supposed to be behind us. In fact, if you guys will recall, Mike pulled out And was it a suspected heart attack or a stroke? Something very serious. I don't say this at all to be funny, but I can't remember. I remember the airplane and taking off. I remember the wheelchair. I remember the entire thing. I remember the cover-up and all of the stories that came out. Like, I remember this entire thing. And was Mike training after that? Did he have to take a meaningful amount of time? Did this buy Mike 5 more months to prepare for Jake Paul? Or did he have a recovery period and the 10 to 12 weeks he planned to put into the training camp is still the 10 to 12 weeks he put into the training camp? He just moved it to now. It's wildly important for the story. And he looks good. But physically, when you just look at Mike, you know, he looks like, and people keep calling him 58. I don't think he's 58. Is he 58, guys? I feel like that's pushed it just a little bit. I thought he was 53 the night he came back and fought Roy Jones. And that was a meaningful amount of time ago, but I don't think it was 5 years. And I'm just bringing that to you because when you look at Jake Paul, I don't know how Mike would have done with Jake that night. That was the night Jake put down the basketball player. And Mike didn't look terrible. He just looked tired that night. But Mike is a little bit older, so he's not any better. Jake is older, but at the right time of his life where you do get better. And Mike had no more experiences, so he didn't get any better. He had no more training, so he didn't get any better. Jake had lots of experiences and lots of training, so Jake got meaningfully better. So if you're questioning at all who would have won that night, if you're even on the fence of, I don't know who, yeah, maybe it would have been Jake. If you're even on the fence, then it is without question that you should be betting on Jake to win this one. And I haven't heard of a backup fighter, by the way. They're going back to Jerry's World, which is a colossal undertaking that is colossally unnecessary. And this was their opportunity to get out. Like when this fight got canceled, this was their opportunity to rebook it, tell the world, hey, we got to play the venue game like everybody else and put it in an 8,000 seat venue like it should have been put in the very first place. All right, save that thought. That's on them. Right? Boxing only exists because you always find a bigger fool willing to lose money. Boxing on all levels is only here today because you can continually find somebody willing to lose money. So that's on them. But I will share with you, when you're losing money, you'd like to lose as little as possible. And I haven't heard of a backup fighter. I think it's necessary. I think it's very necessary. And I also think they're in a very interesting position with that. And generally a backup fighter would come in to save the day and you're just using math. Just mathematically, we are unlikely to lose both people in this fight. In fact, over history, I don't think there's been a time when we have lost both guys in a fight. I believe you lose one, so if you have one backup guy, off you go. Now, that math doesn't totally work because Mike Tyson versus anybody doesn't work. It's got to be Mike versus Jake. Now, Jake versus the right opponent does work in many different ways. So you end up in a bit of a tough situation. And we exhausted the options of viable free agents when we brought in Mike Perry and had him take on Jake Paul. That was absolutely the right guy, Mike Perry. And that was absolutely the only guy at that time. I don't know if there's anybody else that you can package up and bring forward. The co-main event in no boxing card ever has been featured, right? Not to a point where, okay, you're going to step in, you're going to be the main event, and business goes on. They cancel the whole event. And that's not just Chael's opinion. This just happened, and they canceled the whole event. So, it's an interesting spot. Mike says he can hardly walk. We have pictures of Mike being taken off an airplane and put into a wheelchair, which was lied about. They lied and covered it, and then they found out that TMZ had 5 more photos and a video that they were going to drop. And all of a sudden, the PR team that was a mouthful of liars in the beginning began to lie a little bit closer to the truth. A heart attack and or a stroke, but something very serious. took Mike Tyson out of the fight. It took him off of an airplane. When he got off the airplane, he couldn't walk on his own, evident of the fact that he was placed in a wheelchair. He is now stating publicly that he cannot walk. And nowhere within this story is a statement, a response, or even a thought by the overseeing commission to reconsider this fight. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. I want to thank you for listening, and I want to tell all of you that leave reviews on Apple Podcasts. I truly do read them. And I got one from Unusual, who writes, "Shout out from Alton, Virginia, Chael. This is an amazing podcast, and you are a legend fighter." Some would even say Hall of Fame. And you know what? You're the legend, Unusual. I hope that the rest of you, our massive audience, all have a great week. I hope you have a great weekend, and I hope that you know to be back here same time, same place on Tuesday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.